I want to give my thanks to Al, who has translated Mother's music from a tape that she made onto sheet music, and also has made this tape we listen to tonight. It just fulfills my heart to see those pages with the notes and also to hear that on tape. I feel as if Mother would be very pleased with that. I would like to read from the Gospel of Swami Ramdas. On evil, the creation of the ignorant mind. The question is generally asked why there should be so much evil in the world when there is God, who is all love and compassion. But Ramdas does not see evil anywhere. Everywhere it is he and nothing but he. Everything is done by him alone, and he does everything only for good. The so-called evil is not evil. Good cannot come out of evil. Good comes only out of good. So there is no evil in the world. Evil is only the creation of the ignorant mind. The Yanis say that the whole world is but a creation of the mind. For one whose mind is absolutely still, the world does not exist. But this is the view of the Yanis. The Bhaktas do not care whether the world is real or otherwise. Whatever they see, they take as nothing but the manifestation of their beloved Lord. Coming back to the point that good alone comes out of the even so-called evil, let us look at our own present-day national affairs. When Pakistan does for India, may apparently seem to be a great evil. But you will see in the course of time that good alone will come of it. By the threats of war that Pakistan is holding out all parties and communities in India, are coming closer and closer together. Thus, strong and powerful national unity is developed here. So Pakistan's threats cannot be considered as evil. It is really good, though it may apparently look otherwise. In spite of the war cries in Pakistan, Ramdas does not think that there will be a war between Pakistan and India. There cannot be. And from the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 5, Religion by Renouncing Fruit of Works. Arjuna, yet Krishna, at one time thou dost laud surcease of works, and at another time service through work. Of these twain plainly tell, which is the better way? Krishna, to cease from works is well, and to do works in holiness is well, and both conduct to bliss supreme. But of these twain, the better way is his, who working piously refraineth not. That is the true renouncer, firm and fixed, who seeking not, rejecting not, dwells proof against the opposites. O valiant prince, in doing such breaks lightly from all deed. 'Tis the new scholar talks as they were two, this Sankhya and this Yoga. Wise men know, who husbands one plucks golden fruit of both. The region of high rest, which the Sankhyans reach, yogins attain. Who sees these twain as one, sees with clear eyes, yet such abstraction, chief, is hard to win without much holiness. Whoso is fixed in holiness, self-ruled, pure-hearted, lord of senses and of self, lost in the common life of all which lives, a yogi yakt. He is a saint who wanes straightway to Brahm. Such a one is not touched by taint of deeds. Not of myself I do, thus he will think, who holds the truth of truths. In seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, when he eats or goes or breathes, slumbers or talks, holds fast or loosens, opens his eyes or shuts, always assured this is the sense world plays with senses. He that acts in thought of Brahm, detaching end from act, with act content, the world of sense can no more stain his soul than waters mar the enameled lotus leaf. With life, with heart, with mind, nay, with the help of all five senses, letting selfhood go, yogins toil ever towards their soul's release. Such votaries, renouncing fruit of deeds, gained endless peace. The unvowed, the passion-bound, seeking a fruit from works, are fastened down. The embodied sage, withdrawn within his soul, at every axe sits godlike in the town with chath nine gateways or the body, neither doing aught nor causing any deed. This world's Lord makes neither the work, nor passion for the work, nor lust for the fruit of the work. The man's own self pushes to these. The master of the world takes on himself the good or evil deeds of no man, dwelling beyond. Mankind errs here by folly, darkening knowledge, but for whom that darkness of the soul is chased by light, splendid and clear shines manifest the truth, as if a sun of wisdom sprang to shed its beams of dawn. Him meditating still, him seeking, with him blended, stayed on him, the souls illuminated take that road which hath no turning back, their sins flung off by strength of faith. Who will may have this light, who hath it sees. To him who wisely sees, the Brahmin with his scrolls and sanctities, the cow, the elephant, the unclean dog, the outcast gorging dog's meat, are all one. The world is overcome, I even here, by such as fix their faith on unity. The sinless Brahma dwells in unity, and they in Brahma. Be not over glad attaining joy, and be not over sad encountering grief, but stayed on Brahma still, constant let each abide. The sage whose soul holds off from outer contacts in himself finds bliss. To Brahma joined to piety, his spirit tastes eternal peace. The joys springing from sense life are but quickening wounds, which breed sure griefs. Those joys begin and end. The wise mind takes no pleasure, Kunti-san, in censures those. But if a man shall learn, even while he lives and bears this body chain, to master lust and anger, he is blessed. He is the yukta. He hath happiness, contentment, light within. His life is merged in Brahma's life. He doth nirvana touch. Thus go the rishis unto rest, who dwell with sins effaced, with doubts at end, with hearts governed and calm, glad in all good they live, nigh to the peace of God, and all those live who pass their days exempt from greed and wrath, subduing sense and senses, knowing the soul. The saint who shuts outside his placid soul all touch of sense, letting no contact through, whose quiet eyes gaze straight from fixed brows, whose outward breath and inward breath are drawn equal and slow through nostrils still and close. That one, with organs, heart, and mind constrained, bent on deliverance, having put away passion and fear and rage, hath even now obtained deliverance, ever and ever free. Yea, for he knows me, who am he, that heeds the sacrifice and worship God revealed. And he who heeds not, being Lord of worlds, lover of all that lives, God unrevealed, wherein who shall find surety and shield? It's one of my favorite chapters out of the Bhagavad Gita? And something that I wrote the other evening. Last evening, Larry and I sat in rapt silence, listening to the sound of Om, immersed in the power of God. The occasion was initiated by seeing a slide picture of Meher Baba. The story began thus. Mother had asked Marj Rani to see the master. Although she was told he was not seeing anyone, when she arrived at his place, she was given an individual audience when he came to know of her presence. During that time, she took pictures of him. We had recently been given those pictures and were reviewing them. When we unexpectedly came upon the picture of Baba, Shakti power of God was so terrific it nearly bowled us over. Simultaneously, we were hit with the vibrant potency of his image. Both of us lifted out of body consciousness, and the sound of Om resonated through every part and particle. O blessed Guru and God's saints and masters in this world and beyond, your blessings and power to transform knows no limitations. You who are all merciful operate through your manifestations to bless us all. You have blessed this soul repeatedly, and I bow to you again and yet again. I will put into context some of this evening in that we had been seeing some disturbing news about some things that have gone on in some other organizations connected with Master's work. And with seeing this picture and the Shakti or the power of God come through it, it completely wiped that clean, and we felt as if we were cleansed in that light and that sound of Om. And this is the way that it is on our pathway to God. I'd like to speak to you this evening of the purity of God in all and all. When we experience this world as we do as human beings, we often come to the conclusion that this world is certainly not all that it should be. And perhaps we come to be very pessimistic about this world and about the players within it. We begin to think that there is no hope for mankind, for no hope for peace or harmony, because all seem to be at one another's throats, and there is no peace in the kingdom, but there is only strife as we look about it with human eyes. But these human eyes are but limited vision of this entire world. There is a greater vision, there is a greater eye through which to see this world and its ongoing properties. This spiritual eye that resides within each and every one of us sees this world as God sees this world. And God sees this world very differently from his spiritual viewpoint than we do as human beings. We were told by Papa Ram Dass tonight and in this reading of the Bhagavad Gita that this world is but God's play, and all the actors in it are but manifestations of God. And it is as if that we are all windows with lights illuminating us from behind. And depending on the consciousness of each and every one of us depends on the greatness of how that light shines through us. If we have dulled our minds because we have become overdrunk with the realm of the senses and things of this world, then the light is dim. But if we are cleaning and purifying this mind, then we do something terrific. Not us ourselves, but we become less of an impediment for the light. We begin to let that light shine through us. And so the saints and sages of this world, those ones who have gone up and found their oneness with God, are like beautiful stained glass windows that the sun can shine purely through. Each one has their own particular pattern. Each one has their own particular blend of light. yet each one magnificently shines through the sun of spiritual consciousness. If we are to examine our own lives, how well do we measure up to this standard? How well does God shine through us? Are we a beautiful stained glass window? Or do we see as through a glass darkly? Are there areas in our life that keeps the light from shining through, from us being a blazing light before God? Jesus said, "Don't put your light under a bushel, but put it on a hilltop." You might say, "But if I have no light, then where am I to get this light?" It is not your light. It is God's light within you. And that light is already shining radiantly within you. But you know it not. And because of that, that light does not show fully. It does not show splendidly. It does not light the way for yourself or others. When you are this beautiful stained glass window for God, and you let that light shine fully through you, with or without words, with or without actions, that light shines fully and draws all men, all those who are around you, and indeed ripples out around this earth to lift all consciousness into God consciousness. And what greater life could you give than that? Today we celebrate Father's Day, and in truth, fathers should be revered and held up. I heard a study today in which those areas of the country where fathers are more absent, there is an exact correlation between higher teenage crime, higher teenage pregnancy, and all the rest of it. The absence of fathers hurts the family and hurts the community. Fatherhood should be held up and should be revered. And today we honor those who are fathers. And there is a great Father God. In the cosmology of things, the Father God is God unmanifest, God in pure spirit. And that is the original creation and creator of us all. So many religions see themselves as separate from God, and that God stands afar, as if an angry, vengeful father who is out of control sometimes and does not have control of his own creation. But if there will be only one power, one consciousness, one presence, then how could anything be outside of the control of God? It cannot be. So how do we explain when with human eyes we look around this earth and we see these things that we call evil? It is because we have become too immersed, too attached to this physical way of seeing things. Indeed, all are the manifestations of God. But we need to have the eye through which to see this. It cannot be through a human eye, but rather it needs to be through a divine eye. By focusing our consciousness and the focus of our minds upon God alone, then we gradually purify this mind, not only the conscious mind, but the unconscious mind of all the things that we have come to believe down through the lifetimes, down through the centuries, down through the millennia. And it would be true to say that this would be an impossible task if it were but left up to us. Because in order to perfectly purify that mind, we would have to have perfect thoughts, morning, noon, and night, in order to program this consciousness. And it would have to take a very long time because of the long time of us programming ourselves in fear, in lust, in greed, in anger, wrath, and all the rest of it. But within us lies that seed of perfection. God's perfection. And so that Jesus was able to say, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Now, I've seen bumper stickers that say that Christians are just forgiven, not perfect. And I don't know how they rectify these two statements, because Jesus asked us to be perfect, even as our Father in heaven is perfect. From a human standpoint, this could not be so. But because that perfection lies right within your own consciousness, it is possible through purifying this human consciousness to perfectly reflect the divine consciousness within you. But who makes the effort? And who wants to know it more than anything else? It needs to be a thing of 100% commitment. Now, this does not mean you need to leave your lives, but rather to lead your lives. Lead them in the way that God directs you. Focus your attention upon Him, whatever the task, whatever you are doing. As Krishna talked about tonight in the reading, to detach end from act with act content. Now, if we were to break this down into our lives, when we pursue a certain action, we anticipate a particular result, and most of us as human beings are pleasure-bound. We want to relieve pain and maximize pleasure. And because of this attachment towards the pleasure and the avoidance of pain, we act in accordance with this human ego. But when we sign up with God, we put ourselves in a different direction. And what we do is we focus our attention upon the spiritual aspect of God. Now, this does not always lead us towards what is pleasurable, but oftentimes takes us on pathways that may be difficult, may be the more challenging way to go. But it is all with the view in mind of releasing us from fear and attachment. And fear is actually just another form of attachment. Anything that we fear, we are attached either to our comfort or to this life or to some conception of the way that we are. But when we let go of our need for comfort, when we let go of our attachment to how we believe ourselves to be in this world, then we free ourselves from fear. And we free ourselves to act in accordance with the divine principle. Now, we can come up with 1,001 excuses, and all of them are very believable in a human sense, believe me. But they will not get you the results that you are headed for if you want the spiritual freedom. No matter how often you have come up with excuses for your behavior of why you are attached to this, that, or the other thing, that's all right. You are just going to play in this play of God's a little while longer. But when you are ready to make that trip towards God consciousness alone, then we need to take on the attitude of fearlessness. Now, sometimes that doesn't mean that you don't feel any fear, but as there is a famous book there today titled, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. There's once a Congressional Medal of Honor winner who was being interviewed, and I watched the interview. And he said, you know, he said, some people think courage is being in a dangerous situation and not feeling any fear. He says, I can tell you that was not my case, and I don't think that that's a good definition of courage. He said, courage is when you feel the fear and you decide to do the right thing anyway. And so with each one of us, we are faced day to day, perhaps with those things that we fear, those things that we believe make us smaller in God. But we cannot be made smaller in God. That is not possible. Only within our own minds. That is the limitation. That is the way that we get stumbled and tripped up. But when we go to the Father God, we move into a new realm. When the yanis, or those of wisdom, start on this path, they say the world is an illusion. and spirit alone is real. Bhaktis also go through that path where they become so devoted on the infinite beyond this creation that that is the only thing, perhaps through a form, but ultimately they move through that form and into infinite consciousness and awareness beyond form. Because to stay with that form alone would be a limitation. But once that infinite consciousness is established, then it is no longer that the world is unreal, but that the world has become a manifestation of that consciousness. And so when you travel on this path, you can take it that everything that comes to you is coming to you from God. And you can take it that every individual that you meet is a manifestation of God. It's a tremendous thing, you know. Perhaps at one time you've met somebody and you didn't think too much about them. And then perhaps you had a conversation with them, and through that conversation you learned that they were fascinating, intelligent, wise, perhaps beyond their years. Something surprising about them. And suddenly you took on a new view of them. They were no longer just an image or a form that had passed by you, but they were a living, breathing individual. Perhaps sometime you've been around a lot of people, and you become blunted to the universal aspect of God in each person. But if you were to step back and say, each one of these people have their own lives, their own feelings, their own thoughts, their own history, everything. Not only that, but they are God in human form. Then it literally blows your mind. It is beyond human conception. And there are over 5 billion of us. And within 100 years, 5 billion of us will leave our bodies. And more than 5 billion will come onto the earth. I sometimes thought about the astral way stations where all these souls are going to and coming back in, and they must be quite busy. And as they help these souls come and recover from this earthly existence, to learn from it, this is universal consciousness, and this is just one tiny aspect of the whole creation. It's quite beyond conception. And it is until you begin to touch in with the mind of God. Now, it may sound like an arrogant statement to say you can know the mind of God, but it is true, because you are one with that. You are part and parcel of it. You cannot be different from it. And when you touch it, it is like when you put your foot on the earth and it connects you with the whole earth. When you touch God, it connects you with all of God. And because you have the capacity of the intuitive mind, you can know any aspect of that consciousness of God. As you attune yourself and purify your own mind. But the funny thing is this, that as you purify your own mind, your own desires become less and less. And then you feel as if you are a little child in the hands of an infinite father and mother. And you say, Lord, you teach me what you will. You guide me as you will. What would I know to do? If you were to think about transforming your body, your astral body, your causal body into complete divine attunement, what would you know? What would be the first thing that you would know to do it, to do? We are at a total loss. But God knows. And that infinite intelligence within you knows. And because of that, you turn yourself over to that infinite intelligence completely. Lock, stock, and barrel, every part and particle. And when you do that, then that infinite intelligence takes over. And it begins to move in you and to change you and to bless you and to make you a new individual in Christ. That universal perfect consciousness. Christ is not an individual. But Jesus Christ was one of those beautiful stained glasses whose light shines so terrifically that it shines down through the ages to us today. as did Krishna, as did Buddha, as did Lao Tzu, and many others. And so we should honor those lights. We should honor the light that has shined down and helped to change and transform this world. They were spiritual geniuses. And they were so filled with the power of God, and the intelligence of God, the wisdom of God, and the bliss of God, that that took on a universal character. And so many have been uplifted and changed. We should not find fault with them for what their followers have done. And followers all the world around take on an orthodoxy. They worship the law rather than the spirit of the law. But this is not the fault of the teachers. This is the fault of the followers. And it is because they have not realized their oneness with God, which is what they have all taught. So let us organize our lives differently, if that needs to be the case. Let us focus our attention on attaining that one infinite consciousness. It makes all the rest of it look foolish by comparison. You know, if you were to listen to a couple of small children out in the backyard arguing over some toys, some baubles that are there, and as a parent, you might smile and think, well, that's quaint, or that's foolish, or look at those silly children. Because in 5 minutes later, nobody even wants the truck. I think the Battle of St. Joseph was, or not St. Joseph, but Joseph the Native American. And they wanted their land because there is a rumor that there was gold on it. They had been deeded that land. But suddenly, because there is this gold on it, everybody wanted it. And so they drove them off of that land. Well, it created much pain and difficulty for Chief Joseph and his people, and totally changed their lives. And then later on, they found there was no gold on it. You can drive out in that area now. It's undisturbed. It's pretty much how it was when they were there. All because of a belief, all because of some greed that took over. And so it's been down through the ages. What's fought over at one moment is suddenly valueless at another moment. At one time, if a farmer found oil on their ground, they were in complete despair. It was totally worthless. It ruined the land, everything. Today, they would be quite happy about it. And perhaps in 100 years, they won't care about it again because we will have moved on to some other kind of fuel. So all of this is relative. It's passing. And that's why the Buddha said life is painful. Because it all passes away. It all changes. Now this is not to minimize or marginalize your life or the things that you do. But rather, it should put it in perspective that as you act, as you do, let go of the results. Let go of your idea of what should happen. But act because you feel that is right within you. You know that that's the right thing to do. And therefore, your action emanates out from that. And you're not looking for results in the world to guide you. I hear certain individuals say, well, God told me to do this particular thing, but then, you know, my car wouldn't start and I didn't get the money and so on and so forth, and so I decided it was God telling me not to do it. If we depend on this world to tell us our direction, we're in sad shape. It's the tail wagging the dog. Spiritual consciousness comes about from inner knowing, and inner knowing can only separate human knowing from divine knowing by becoming quiet and still in the spirit. Be still and know that I am God. So become still in your life. Practice that. Even in the midst of activity, practice being still. It's an amazing thing. You know, when we get involved in our day-to-day life, We get so caught up in the details and things, and we completely forget who and what we are. One of the Buddha's Eightfold Paths is right remembrance. Now, I don't think he was talking about developing a strong memory. He was talking about remembering who are you. And that pertains through the whole day. And when you remember who you are and what you are, you can go through the day and you do not take on all the tensions, all the fears, all the anxieties of the world. But rather, you live in the world, but not of it. And this makes a tremendous difference. And then you can listen to that still, small voice within you. So let us no longer deny ourselves entryway into the kingdom of heaven. It is ours, if we would but make the effort. But it cannot be half-hearted. It cannot be just on Sundays. It cannot be just on special holidays. It is moment to moment, hour to hour, day to day. It is living the life as we know that we should. And when we do this, then we move ourselves into a new state of awareness. And with that new state of awareness comes a rebirth, reborn in spiritual consciousness as we die to the ego consciousness. And this is the fulfillment that we all will eventually achieve. But effort makes the difference. And if you make the effort now, then you will receive the results now. And this is how it should be. So become a beautiful stained glass window for God. Become that purity of consciousness, heart, mind, and soul. And do not get discouraged. If you feel discouraged, then continue on in faith. If you feel down, imagine the light shining within you. And know that whether you are conscious of it or not, it is radiant. And you will know it, even though you don't know it in that moment. Hang on with everything in your mind. Because when you set your mind to something, you begin to program yourself for future behavior. When you put your mind on God, you open yourself in that moment to grace. When you set your mind on God, you cut loose of all your past and bring yourself into the here and the now. So bringing that purity of heart, mind, and soul, and be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. That means attain that perfect consciousness, not some ideal law of fulfilling every, dotting every I and crossing every T. That's not it. That's not it. But it's attaining that spiritual consciousness where you know that you and God are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. In closing, I'd like to read a saying by St. Teresa of Avila that I think is wonderful. Don't imagine that if you had a great deal of time, you would spend more of it in prayer. Get rid of that idea. Again and again, God gives more in a moment than in a long period of time, for His actions are not measured by time at all. Will you please pray after me? O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet and surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.
Blessed Spirit, I am he.